Hello everyone and welcome to Inside the Arena podcast, brought to you by Piers Arena. On Inside the Arena podcast, we talk about mental health, well-being, and every other issues and challenges we all face in our day-to-day lives. And on each episode, we'll be having a guest on to talk about their own experience with these issues, and most importantly, how they are able to navigate and overcome life struggles and challenges. I am your host, Tony, and thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for taking the time to have this conversation with me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would like to kick off the conversation by having you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. I'm honored to be on. My name is Abisoye. I'm called Abisoye by all and sundry, but for formality's sake, let's just say I'm Abisoye Fadairo. I stay in Ogun State, Abeokuta, precisely, and I'm into baking events generally, but baking is my fault. Let's just say I'm a baker. And what's there to tell you again? Basically, that's just me. And I am a mom of one, Omolabake. Her dad is dead. He died 15 years ago. So that's us, basically.
Yeah. Once again, thank you very much for taking the time to have this conversation with me. And I'm sure during the course of the conversation, we'll get to find out more about you. But speaking about what you just said now, having a late husband who died 15 years ago, that was particularly one of the reasons why I wanted to speak to you today. So I was made aware of you by a post a friend sent me on Twitter. Like a Twitter trend when somebody was talking about, I think it was Kelvin. He was talking about a situation where, a woman's husband who was seriously sick was taken to the hospital. And when he was stabilized, the wife was asked to go home with the kids by the man's brother. And the man passed on later that day. And he was taken, his corpse was taken to the village, without even telling his wife or his kids that their father had passed. And, the wife later found out and it was very devastating. And I think she was actually kind of blamed for that situation, like for killing him or something. And you came under the thread and you also told your story sort of like briefly. You talked about, how your husband passed 15 years ago and you and your daughter till this day still don't know where he was buried. And you were also accused of killing him or something like that, or being responsible for his death. Which is not something to be joked about. And it's a very, very sad situation when somebody passes and, things like that happen. So, I wanted to really have a conversation about you about that and also to get to know more about you. So, maybe telling us a little bit about that whole situation. I think it would be way much better maybe telling us how you and your husband met and how the whole situation was with family on both sides and leading up to that situation. Is that something you can actually share with us?
Okay, I'll try to make it brief. It's a very long story, actually. But
we have all the we have like an hour, I think, so you can take your time. Yeah,
I know. Well, we were both, I'm 41 now. He would have been 41 as well if he was alive. So if you remove 15 years from our ages, you can see we were quite young. I had my daughter 10 days after my 22nd birthday, actually. So we met in school. We were both in school, College of Education, then FCU, Shele. And one thing led to the other, and we just bonded and all of that. Labake came into the picture about a year after. And it seemed like he had a good family. I would say seemed like, because events that unfolded later showed that it was a facade. We were both young. Maybe if I was older than this then, I would have done some things differently. I do not know, but well, that is that for that. So, Namake came, and the first few months, all was going well. You know, we finished in school, and I am somebody who loves reading. So I was like, me, I'm not satisfied with NCO. Me, I'm going for my degree. And we agreed, okay, fine, let's go for our degrees. And I guess he told his folks and they were like, what do we need a degree for? I said, excuse me, I'm not asking your son to fund my education. My mother has not said she's tired. So I don't get where the problem is coming from. Face your son. My own mother would face me and we will meet in the middle. It's not difficult. But somewhere along the line, I think they now told him to ask me to choose between him and my degree. And I didn't even think twice before choosing my degree. Because I was just like, how can you ask me to throw my whole future away? I have dreams, I have aspirations, and I don't get it. We never had third parties interfere before, and we were doing fine. Why are you bringing a business outside? Kilo shele gongo. And he was like, hey, no, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, it is my degree I will choose. And it became messy after that. So I had to come down to Abeokuta from Lagos. And, you know, he actually went ahead to collect the degree form, as I would later know. Okay, no, I collected it myself. I collected for both of us. And I guess he was discouraged. You know, I was not there within that time. So I can't really say this is what happened. But, well, I processed my admission, everything clicked, and I went back to school. I would later hear that he actually took the exams, he passed, and his dad told him that he should not go ahead, because if he went ahead, he would see me, that I was proud and arrogant for choosing my education and whatever. So I was just like, we will meet in the future, Jarida, he's not going anywhere, Joe. Maybe there is a child in between us. You know, that kind of thinking, that kind of myopic thinking. I was thinking he would be around forever. See how stupid I was. So, when I went back to school, everything was going on fine. He would call me from time to time, ask of Labaki. And it was as if we had a fight, but we were separated, yes. And within that year, he had this accident. It wasn't an accident. He was in Computer Village and there was a shooting going on between policemen and Yahoo boys, like I would later hear. It was a huge thing because it was in magazines and news and everywhere. I still have the magazine in my house till today. And he was one of the people caught in the crossfire. And you know, he did not die immediately. Here's where it gets weird. He didn't die immediately. He held on for 9 days. And for those 9 days, he was asking for me. He was asking for his daughter. My daughter was 3+, going on 4. It happened. He died July 3rd, but he was shot on the 25th of June. So he held on and was asking, and nobody even deemed it fit to call us. I was like, even if they were angry at me, it's understandable. But Labaka is their blood now, as in their grandchild. Even if they didn't want me, why didn't they even try to maybe come and pick her or something? You know, I couldn't make it make sense. It was, and I was so young, I wasn't, now I'm used to the ways of the world. Nothing shocks me anymore when things happen. Now, I'll just be like, oh, we have seen how it is going in the world in bulk price. I beg, anything can happen. Nothing is strange anymore to me. And you know, on the ninth day, when he could hold on no more, they watched him die. He died. They buried him. And the following day after burying him, they now called us. That he had, they didn't even tell us they had buried him. That he was dead though. That they just said he's dead and they called the phone. It was my mom that they called. My mom didn't know how she would tell me. My mom went to go and pick Labaka in school that day, went to Lagos. It was when my mom got to Lagos that she saw that he had been buried. And when she came back home, I was numb. I didn't even, you know, everything was happening like a dream. I couldn't believe he was dead because he was so full of life. So how can somebody who is so full of life 1 minute be dead the next minute? And when my mom came, she was like, they've even buried him. I said, what? They've buried him? Did they show you? She said, no. I was like, what is this? Well, the coming days were very dark, or the coming years, if I would say. You know, I couldn't find closure because I didn't know where he was buried. So finding closure was very difficult. I'm not sure if I found closure, but that I can even talk about this without crying. Make that tweet, which I didn't even know would go viral. And, you know, seeing comments that I could actually laugh and even respond, it shows that somewhere along the line, I healed without even knowing. Yes. I wasn't conscious of the fact that I was healed anyway, because it was difficult to move on. Because he was a good man. He was only plagued with a bad family. That is, I will not speak ill of him because he's not here to defend himself. And you know, after all said and done, we moved on with our lives, my daughter and I. Thank God for my mom. And she's still alive anyway. And by God's grace, she will still be alive for many more years.
Amen.
So my mom, amen. So my mom was like, you will finish your degree. I don't even know how I graduated with a 2-1 in French. But I graduated, yes, and my convocation and everything. And, you know, I went for youth service, came back, job hunted, there were no jobs. I just went to go and learn baking to put the professional touch, and I started professionally. And so the glory of God, it's not been a smooth ride. Raising a kid alone is not easy.
Yeah.
And, well, along the line, my father-in-law called my daughter, sat her down. She was barely 10 years old. And told her that I was the one that killed her father. After saying I killed him when he died, and they were saying, we are Yorubas. So there's this something Yorubas do. When someone dies and there's a mystery surrounding the death, they would say they would invoke the spirit of the person and ask the person what killed him or her. And then tell the person to go after whoever had a hand in his or her death. So my father-in-law was saying it then, that we call it, in Yoruba land, we call it Wofero Oku. So if you have any Yoruba listeners, they would understand that. And when I heard, I now told the person who told me to tell him, because I've never been scared of him, to tell him that I said, if he dares, he should invoke that spirit. That does he think I do not know what happened? That if I keep quiet, I am keeping quiet because after all said and done, my daughter bears their name and is their own. So he should go and dare it if he would. And I guess he couldn't. So that one went like that. Years after, he told my daughter he killed her father. That one now came back home. She went there for holidays that year. She now came back home and she was asking me, she said, Mommy, did you kill my daddy? I said, where is this one coming from like this? Because she's vocal like me. And she said, her grandpa said. I said, okay, good. Your grandfather told you that? She said, yes. I said, okay. We are going to do something now. A story you have not heard before, I would have to tell you. I was thinking you would be more grown than this before I would have to tell you this, but in the light of events, let me tell you. Do you know where your father is buried? She said, no. I said, good. That is not my doing, my darling. It is the doing of your father's people. You know they are your father's people. Whether you like it or not, there's no way you can throw them. I said, so, your people, your father's people, your beloved family, took your father and buried him like a yam, even though you are alive. And when they buried him, they now called us that your father is dead. Even me, your mother, does not know where your father is buried. So, in the light of things, who killed your father? Is it still me? He said, no, it is them. I said, good. I now called my father-in-law that day on the phone. And I told him, I said, my daughter has delivered your message to the letter. And I have heard of. But you know what, sir? You think the future is far, but it is not far. On that day that future you think is far, will arrive. I will remind you. So keep doing as you are doing. Every single one of us will get his or her comeuppance in due season. And I just cut off the phone. 5 years after, again, we had, you know, they left us. They didn't even bother to ask how we were faring. Fine. I wasn't even bothered. Such things don't bother me. Because I know there's a God up there and somehow he doesn't sleep and he sees everything. So I wasn't really bothered. My mother-in-law, she's late now. And I think she wanted to have her 60th birthday or something and retirement. They not said they wanted my daughter to come. And I was like, will she fly? Because I won't bring her. So if you know you want her, maybe somebody from your end should come and pick her. That didn't go down well with them, but well, they said there was nobody to come and pick her, so she wasn't there. My mother-in-law now got angry and called me. You know, when she called me, she was now talking, and I was just like, you don't even know how we are eating. You people will come once a year. You bring one carton of Indomie that has 40 pieces inside. Even the small one got me. It is not hungry man size. And now you say you want to do one nonsense party. Me, I should be bringing the three, picking away the secondary school. I don't, how do you people even reason? I don't understand. She now said, hey, that as she is, she will never ask of the child again. I said, excuse me, ma, the day you were telling the child that, the child called you that has school fees. You said if her mother lies, she should send her to a school that they are paying 1 million, that you don't care. I heard that deal. I just kept quiet too. Why do you suddenly want her to be at your celebration? A child you don't care about. I don't understand, ma. She now said, she would not ask of the child again. I said, it is a prayer you have prayed and God will put amen to what you have said. May you never have the grace to ask of the child again. And I just cut the phone. A month later, they called us that she was dead and said for the burial, Labake should come. I said, the same Labake that was not present at her own father's burial should now come to your grandmother died. Is it Labake that killed her? She's not coming. My father-in-law was shouting and I was like, there's nothing you people can do. So she should come and do dust to dust for her grandmother. But she does not know where her father is buried. Are you clowns? And they arrested. They did not bother me again. I don't talk to them. But I make sure that Labake talks to them because we are in Africa and no matter what happens, they will say it is the father that owns the child. And well, her own father is dead, but he just still has family. So I just told her to forgive and let go. It doesn't mean embrace them, no, but if they call you, pick their calls. If they talk to you, talk to them. If they give you, if it is 1 naira that they sent to you, tell them thank you. And just be looking. But I don't want any animosity between you people. They are your people. Until you get married and change your name, you are still bearing their name. Whatever happened between I and them, don't even worry. Leave that one for God to sort. You can't sort it. So from time to time, she would tell me one of her aunties gave her 5K. One of her aunties gave her credit. I would say, hey, you said thank you to them. Because me, I don't have any business with them. She would say, child, be saying thank you. I didn't raise you to be a disrespectful child. Just keep respecting them. With time, everything would be sorted. So when she got to the university, they said again that they will see how far I would go in raising her. And I said, okay, we are seeing, Abby. Let us be seen. Nobody will go blind in Jesus' name. And we are seeing as it is true, because she's in 300 level now. And well, somehow, we've been scaling through and but it's not been easy because psychologically, there were times I came close to committing suicide. I wouldn't lie. And yes, I wouldn't lie. You know, a lot of people see me as a strong woman, but I'm not sure I am strong. I don't know. But, well, I'm still standing. And I will continue to stand. But this is, I don't know why in this part of the world, whenever the husbands die before the wives, automatically the wives kill them. My in-laws would have shown me shege. It is just that even me myself, I showed them shege as well, as we showed each other shege. But my shege was more than their own. If I had, you know, that is why I tell young women, choose yourself all the time. Because you never know when or what could happen, and you would regret not choosing yourself. Because if I hadn't chosen myself by going back to school, I would have seen hell. If I was not separated with my husband when he died, if I was actually there, I don't know what could happen. With that kind of family, I do not know what could have happened. So when I see people say Igbos, it is why I responded to that tweet. You know, they were making it look like an Igbo thing. No, it is not an Igbo thing. Wickedness knows no tribe. Wickedness is not tribalistic. I swear. There are terrible Yorubas, there are terrible Hausas, terrible people are everywhere. So it was why I had to say, we are not Igbo. Both of us, in fact, we were both from Ogun State. He was from Abeokuta. I am from Ilaro. Yes. So this is not even far-fetched at all. Maybe it is common in Igbo land. I do not know because I don't live with them. But I hear people stereotype them a lot that they make their widows suffer and all of that. But I think it is a Nigerian thing, generally. They will strip you of everything. They will collect all that he has. What did Ayodele have when he died? 15 years ago, he didn't have anything now. But the little that he had, no, now we didn't have access to anything. The only thing that they did for us, because I would say the one that they did, that is me, was when Labake wanted to enter 100 level. You know, I told you her grandmother died.
Yeah.
Yes. So her grandmother's death gratuity was to be shared between the children. There are 6 of them. And I think when they were having their family meeting, one of them said, it is true that their brother is no more, but he has a child. That the one that they should have given their brother, they should give the child. They said it was only that one person. It was that person's wife that was doing the apoko for me that time. So she said the other said, lie, they should not give Labake anything. They said he shall stood that this became that for the past God knows how many years, you don't even know how the mother is doing it. So we should now that we can even try and do something, at least let us do. Eventually, they called my mom. They can't call me because they do not know what I would say. But yes. So till today, none of them can actually call me. If I when that tweet went viral, I think one or two of them saw it. And my daughter was telling me, because that one is around as we speak. So she was telling me that two of her uncles called her separately and they asked after me. I said, no. They don't ask after me now. So why are they asking after me? She said she was surprised. I said, okay, good. I said, your father's people have seen the tweet I made that went viral. They know what they are doing. Maybe they have my number. I have not changed numbers. And my NCN number has been constant. It was their brother that bought the line for me before he died that year. Yes. So they have that number. So they can call me to ask how I am. Why are they asking you how I am? They know you are in school. You shouldn't even be home. So why are they asking after me from you? She now said, so they saw the tweet. I said, definitely they did. They are not stupid. And I have not lied. I have only said that which they did. I have not wronged them in any way. They are the ones who have wronged me. So, and if I have kept quiet for 15 years, that should tell you something, because it gets to a stage where silence will start speaking. even though it has no voice.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. This is actually the first time I would talk about this publicly. People were shocked as people were sending me screenshots of Insta blog, blah, 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 Linda Ekeji, and they were like, is this you? I said, yes, it is me. And this happened to you. I said that we don't talk does not mean we haven't seen Shege. It's just that, well, I don't know. Probably time is right to break the silence is why this is happening. Normally, I would scroll past Kevin's tweets. But, you know, I was just riled up when I saw them making it about Igbos. And I was like, no, now. It's not only Igbos that are wicked now. Yorubas can be very mean, too. And, you know, I was reading the responses. Other people were now coming. People who were Igbo and married Yoruba. And they were stripped of everything. And, you know, and I was just like, a lot of people out there need help. A lot of people are emotionally and mentally damaged from what they have gone through. Not everybody will be as lucky as I am. And it's because I had a strong support system. My mother is like 1 million people. Yes. There was a day a young widow was asking me how I coped. She's a fresh widow. Her husband just died. And I told her, I said, if you do not have a good support system, you will not cope. I will not whitewash anything for you. If you do not have a good support system, you will just wake up one day and drink sniper. You won't even think of your children. She was like, ah, I said, yes. So let people in, you know, if you have good people around you, quietly let them in. Don't come and be forming strong woman like that. It is not an easy journey. Because your in-laws, if you have bad in-laws, you are in trouble if your husband dies before you. As in real trouble. It is something I have experienced and I can talk about. My only saving grace was that I was not inside that house when he died. That was the only thing. If not, you know, I don't know what would have. Maybe they would have even collected my daughter and sent me out. That is how terrible that family is. And it is the same tribe. So what if I was Igbo or Fulani or Hausa? Waiting for don't happen. I don't know.
Yeah. It's really, really crazy. I'm truly, truly sorry for everything that has happened to you. And I want to commend you for being strong, being the person you are. I also want to commend your mother and your various support systems. And
yeah, my mother deserves all the accolades.
Yes, yes. I think I'm able to pick up a few things which you have said in like accepting the fact that you are in a situation and allowing people come in to help is actually very, very important. Yes. And I can't stress that enough. I can't say that enough. That's fundamentally the foundation of this platform. And
that's why I said what I said. Yes.
Yes, that's fundamentally the foundation of this platform. So I actually have just a few questions from what you've said. You talked about the fact that you guys met when you were both in school. So my question is, were you guys officially married?
Not really. It was just the traditional introduction and the wine carrying, whatever.
Okay, we are Africans, like you rightly said, we're Nigerians. That's actually being married. we have to respect our tradition. So this is where the whole thing kind of threw me off and I got confused is, if you guys were married, and what was the particular reason? Did you ever find out the reason why they didn't want you to further with your education? And why they didn't even want him also to further with his education? Was there a particular reason why they didn't want that?
Well, maybe because if we look at it very well, my father-in-law did not read anything. He's basically an illiterate. And well, my mother-in-law eventually went back for her degree. And when she did, my father-in-law nearly killed her. Yes. He nearly killed her. He was not happy Now she went for her degree. But somehow she scaled through because she's in the education line. And she got that degree against all odds. So I think it was a case of complex.
Okay.
That's why if I would ever remarry in my life, I would never marry anybody who is lower than me in any aspect. It never ends well. It's not a matter of being proud or arrogant. It never ends well. I was seen as somebody who had too much aspirations by them. Their mentality was way, way different from mine. So they were just like, you know, one of my sisters-in-law actually said it then that why, even if I wanted to go for a degree, why would I want to go for a full-time degree? Why not a part-time? And part-time was expensive. Everybody knows this. And it is time-wasting. It is double the time you would use for full-time. Yeah, I did not have that kind of time now. Let me read what I want to read and close shop. What is it? And she went on further to say that it is only a woman who has plans to go and start being promiscuous on campus after she's married though, would want to go for full-time. And I was just like, look, me, I don't even care anything you people like, say, or do. As long as I am not at your mercy for the funding of my education, I know you can't call the shots.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. So that is why I would say, women, choose yourself. Till today, I am happy I chose myself. Because if I hadn't chosen myself, why would I not even choose myself? My mother is a vet doctor. My father is a SAN. Why would I not choose myself? I don't get it. Why would I just hold an NC and think I've made it in life? No, now it's not possible. But their background was different from mine. Mediocre was something to celebrate with them. Mediocrity is something that does not exist in my own dictionary. No, it doesn't exist. There is no middle to me. Even as a person, I am of two extremes. You can never, warm is not in my choice. It's either I am blazing or I am freezing. So I was just like, you know, I was like, who are these ones now? Waiting up. You got done born. Marry your pikin. Man, no go school. Not decrease. And I was just like, fuck it. I'm going back to school. Ah, say what's going to happen.
Yeah, so we can.
So I think the basis was complex. Yes, it was complex. Inferiority complex.
So we can almost look at this issue as the, it was the normal African traditional way of living whereby they expected a woman is supposed to stay home and take care of the kids and be at the mercy of what her husband
at the mercy of that is what happened to me.
Yeah, it's just quite unfortunate that people
very, very
have that kind of mentality. If there's something I can actually celebrate about my generation, which are the millennial generation, is the fact that couples encourage each other to actually further their careers and their ambitions.
Yes.
And if you want to actually thrive and not just survive in today's world, in today's economy, it's even a thing to celebrate if you have a wife or a partner who has ambition. Who has ambition to also push themselves forward and support the family and also feel a sense of
teamwork, coming together and making it work.
Yes, and also feel a sense of accomplishment. You know, there's often this saying that you can't actually give what you don't have, and if you can't. Yeah, and if you don't love yourself enough to be like, okay, I'm doing this which I want to do, and in so doing, I feel happy, I feel accomplished, and I have love in my heart, and that actually makes me a better mother, that makes me a better wife, and that makes me a better sibling, and the rest of it. So, that also is something that I can actually say, okay, yes, people are beginning to open their eyes to see all of that. You don't have to stifle yourself or kill your ambition or kill whatever dreams or aspiration you have just because your partner wants otherwise or your partner's family in your own case. Like I said, I'm truly, truly sorry about that whole situation. So,
it's okay.
How has the relationship been between you and your daughter?
We have an amazing relationship. As in amazing. You see, even my daughter says, she's more like my best friend. We had our stormy years. That was during the early teens. Yeah, those years were really stormy. But then, we were good. She was a teenager in every sense of the word. That was 13 to 15, yeah. But then, after we passed that stage, I know. The way we relate as if we are sisters. So we have a great relationship, actually.
I'm sure you should be glad to hear about that. So, yeah. What has she ever asked her father's people if they would actually show her where her father is buried, if not for nothing, just for her to pay her respects or something? Has that ever been a conversation she has ever had with them?
I think she once asked, and they told her they would take care of it when the time is right. I do not know when that time will be right, but that is entirely their own problem. Like seriously, I don't talk to her father's people. My sister-in-law is on my WhatsApp list, and she tries to talk to me, really, in all fairness to her. She apologized somehow, about 4 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, 2018, I think. Yes. You know, she sent me a message on Facebook which I left hanging for like a year because it was in my filtered folder. I did not want to talk to any one of them because that one and I have history, terrible history. Yes, a terrible history, really. And so I was just like, no, I don't want these people in my life. I am not their daughter. It is their daughter that I'm the custodian of. They should just stay with that woman and leave me out of their wahala. I don't want problem. But you know, that day I was just like, let me even accept this message request. After a year, I now accepted. Immediately, I replied her. She just answered like she was. It was as if she had been monitoring that message, that one day this girl would answer. So she now said her that I should give her my number. How is Labake? She knows Labake's birthday is coming up in a few days. She wants to give Labake something. Blah, blah, blah. I was just like, from where to where? That I did not understand. So now I greeted her well. I asked her for her children and her husband. And I was like, okay, fine. Let me give you Labake's grandma's number. Me, I'm not home as we speak. And I was in Lagos then, truly. So I gave her my mom's number. And they said she called immediately. Spoke with Labake, prayed for her, as I was told. And he sent Labake 5,000 naira that year, in all fairness to her. And from time to time, she actually reaches out to me. Even her husband called me one time like that. But I do not want any familiarity. I don't. Let them just do their day. I'm not fighting with them anymore. I have forgiven, but forgiveness does not mean not creating boundaries. And so let them just be at arm's length. Whenever Labake has important things in her life to do, maybe convocation, wedding, whatever, they will be there, yes. I won't deny them of that. But that me and them, we can't be friends now. No, we cannot. It is not possible. I'm a realistic person. How can I be friends with such people now? I cannot. Lie. So day your day, make I just day my day. So she tries to reach out from time to time. I think she and Labake looks like a carbon copy. Yes, carbon copy. You would think he was the one that bested Labake. So they talk, even with her cousins too, that one's children. I asked her, Labake, do you speak with Elizabeth's mom? She will say yes. I said, okay, good. Just keep it open. They are your people. Her children are your cousins. And there's nothing you can do about that one. So just keep it open. And you can create boundaries. You are my daughter. You know what to do.
I actually asked that question because, Just like they saw your tweets and they were concerned and calling your daughter and the rest of it. If any one of them should actually listen to this conversation by chance or by anything, I think the first way and the first step of actually making amends to whatever situation is actually trying to rectify what has actually led us to that, to this situation, to this part where we are right now. Because I lost my mother last year, February, right? So,
oh, wow. I'm so sorry.
Nah, thank you very much. Still something I'm still processing. And one of the things I am highly, highly grateful of to her family is they simply asked us, me and my two elder sisters. It was a simple question. What do you guys want to do? Like, how do you want to go about the burial ceremony? Where do you want to bury her? Like, it wasn't a decision that they were like, oh, this is how it's been done, whatever the situation. Like that was never the situation, right? We actually were given that opportunity and given that respect to actually, okay, even go ahead and pick out the casket you want. Like, we're just here to support you, however you want to actually lay your mother to rest and give her the proper respect that she deserves. And that's something I will truly never forget in my life because that actually brought the closure you're talking about. It made me understood. I went through that grieving process of knowing, okay, this has happened. You have to do the necessary arrangement and you have to go through that whole process, right? That also helps you in understanding and recognizing the situation you are in. So, like, my own thing is, like, okay, she was absolutely young when this happened. That's still not an excuse, right? Exactly. Because his wife was actually alive and they had a daughter together. Okay. If you're coming back to say you want to make any form of amends or whatever, I think the first thing is giving this family closure by saying, we are sorry about whatever had happened, even be it his siblings or whoever is reaching out. The first thing I really think they should do is having that human sympathy to be like, okay, I'm sorry, this is where your father is buried. Like, we didn't know better, or we made a lot of mistakes were made when this situation happened, maybe because we were grieving and that's the only way we knew how to grieve. I really do not think there's any excuse, but I'm just saying anything.
You're trying to make it make sense.
Anything just to make that situation right so that she can actually, because she might actually have the understanding and the sense that she did have a father and her father passed when she was at a very, very young age and the rest. But she still needs to come to terms and reality with that whole thing by actually, I don't know. But to me, I think that's something she should ask for, because I think it's very, 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 very important. So yes. I just need to get that off my chest, because I can't even imagine a situation whereby my mother will be buried somewhere I don't even have access to, or like that's something I can't even comprehend in my head.
It's a terrible thing.
That's wickedness. That's actually compounding somebody's pain, right? Like, I strongly believe if somebody is going through any form of pain, there's this saying that we've always said, if you can't actually be a solution, try as much as possible not to add to the problem.
Don't be a problem.
Just come on now. You don't have to make someone's life more difficult. Being a young lady that is married and her husband suddenly passed away, right? Like, the worst thing you can actually do in that situation is to actually compound the pain and the pressure that she's actually going through. You know, not even thinking about her mental well-being, like you said, and I was going to come to this, like, you were even feeling suicidal at one point in your life and the whole thing. Like, I know this is your episode and your story and you're supposed to talk about things, but, like, it's a very emotional topic for me, and I can actually almost relate to what you and your daughter may have gone through. And given the fact that I just experienced something not even really similar to your case, but losing someone is actually something that
is difficult.
Yeah, yes. It's absolutely difficult. So back to you. And how have you been? Like, how were you able to get over that situation of being first things first? Do you still get such feelings anymore, or you are totally over that feeling of when you were feeling suicidal?
And I'm totally over that.
I'm really, really glad.
Yeah. Like I said, I do not know what happened, but somewhere along the line, I healed and I didn't even realize it.
Yeah, I'm truly glad. So, okay, you didn't really realize it, but...
No, I didn't.
If you were to point to one or two things, what do you really think got you over the hump? How did you think you really overcame that particular feeling of depression, being suicidal, and how did you think you overcome it from your own perspective?
Let's see. I'm this kind of person who when I'm doing something, I do it with everything I have, like body, heart, and soul, and all of that. So I think then I went back to the choir in my church, and you know, everyone would look at me then and they would be like, how is it that you would sing all these long hymns and anthems offhand? How do you do it? And I would be like, I don't even know. But it was because it was distracting me. So I wasn't having time to think. So I just focused. And when I got back from NYSC to, you know, fine, I was still in school. I just faced my books squarely. And I was just passing anyhow. People were thinking I was brilliant. I said, look at these idiots. They didn't even know anything. Me that I'm reading so that I would not turn mad. As I was doing everything to just take my mind off whatever. So I was always occupied with one thing or the other. So I graduated, went for in-service, came back, went back to learn baking. And all. And you know, I just started doing things I loved doing. Yes, that was it. Hmm. And I was doing it with so much. Fine, I'm a passionate person normally. But then it was doubled. And I don't know, somewhere along the line, I think I completely got over depression. Completely. As in completely. Right now, I can't see if I can't kill myself. Life is very, very beautiful right now. So I guess if there's anybody who is going through this right now,
yeah.
Things you love to do, just start doing them. That is it. Just start doing those things you love. Keep yourself happy and all of that. Yeah. That's all I can say. Yes, because I think it's how I got over it. It took years. It is not an immediate thing. No. It took years, but eventually you'll get there. Yes. And you know, we are stronger than each other. As in, everyone has their own capacity to contain pain, threshold for pain. One of my friends, her husband died, and she wanted to kill herself. I say, see, you still owe small before your husband died. You know when my husband don't die. So what is doing? Your children are still grown. They recognize their father. She, Labake was how old when her father died. Did the world end? So get a grip on yourself. People will say that I was harsh. I said, no, I'm not harsh. If I don't tell her the truth now, she would think one thing. I'll like, get a grip. God will see you through. But first of all, pick yourself up. You can't remain down now. No, now for how long? You have children to take care of. You have bills to pick. It's not going to be an easy journey. It's something you two were doing before. Now it is only you. So you can't afford to stay down. And that is just it. That's what I would tell anybody who is walking this kind of road now. It is a very, very long journey. It is when you start, you know. You don't know when you end it. So they should look for things they love doing to stay sane. And if it is therapy, if you know you need therapy, don't hesitate to get help. Yeah. Don't hesitate to get help.
Yes, I agree.
There are people who are willing to help. Fine, therapy. Maybe some people don't have money. But I know people who still have human face and will do pro bono now. I know now. I know that one.
Yeah.
So people are really, really going through a lot. And well, I don't know. The situation in the country is not even helping matters.
Yeah.
But like I said, I went through your platform, your bow, and I'm sure you are touching lives even more than you know. I'm positive of that one because, well, you can't save the world, but you are doing your bit. Yeah. And kindness is like a perfume. You help one person, that one person helps another person, and it starts going like a chain, an unending chain. And so I really appreciate you for this, and that this, I didn't even know this kind of platform existed. If you hadn't reached out to me, I did not know. And I must just say thank you. All I can say is thank you because, you know, talking about it now makes me feel lighter again, like several shades lighter. I've never talked about this before. No. I just kept it all in and I was just looking. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you very, very much. And
thank you.
And yeah, and because of what you just said now, like not talking about things and keeping things all in and just going on with life, I think that's another reason why I've always talked about, and that's the reason why I understand when people say we should be nice and kind to one another.
Yes, we have to be kind.
Yes, because the next man you see or the next woman you see beside you in the bus, on your way to work, in church, in workplace, or anywhere at all, is actually trying to just keep it all together and keep going with life. So,
yes.
And just like you are doing also. So understanding that fact and approaching situations with that thought in mind actually makes you a much more kinder person and being aware of your surroundings. So that was something I really needed to say. And what were some of the challenges that you faced when you were going through this whole issue?
You know, they would always say the physical and the spiritual are usually intertwined.
Yes.
And the physical controls the spiritual. I would always say this. Nothing is black and white. Life is not 1 + 1 = 2. No. 1 + 1 = usually not 2 on the astral plane. There are a lot of things that happen spiritually, and you know, when you say them, logic can't even explain them. You know, during that time, I was fighting both physical and spiritual, because when the issue of choosing between my degree and my home came in, I started having a lot of nightmares, and it was horrible. I was having nightmares, I really was having nightmares as well. And the nightmares were actually identical sometimes. And he got to a stage where they had to tell him. I don't know where he went. I think maybe his pastor or something. I don't. But he just came back and said he doesn't want to be roped inside anybody's death, or that I should be going to my house. And I was just like, where is this one coming from? And you know, by himself, he picked up the phone, called my mom, and told her that she should come and pick me herself all the way from Abeokuta. And my mother has only one child. That is me. And she was not ready to bury her child. So I think it was maybe 2 or 3 days after my mom had to come and pick me. I was actually pregnant then. And I lost the pregnancy. It was war. I almost lost my life as well. So when I balanced and God took charge of everything, my admission clicked. Very timely something. And I just went back to school. And I was just like, well, the future is still there. Maybe we would pick this up sometime later. But God said no. And he died in between. So even when I left, I know the dreams I had. They were horrible. They were nightmares, terrible things. And I was just like, I have shall left your son. What do you people still want from me again? But well, this is me today. And yeah, I think you asked the question earlier about how I got over being depressed and suicidal, and I said I threw myself into things I loved doing. I started baking about 8 years ago. But I will tell you that every day of the 15 years that Ayodele has been dead, I have mourned him. I never stopped. But I think when I started baking, baking helped me a great deal as well. Because I said earlier that I'm a very passionate person. So I throw my all into anything I do. So I just threw my all into baking as well when I started learning. And I was churning out lovely cakes, and I still do anyway. And I think maybe that was when I completely healed that I didn't know. Now, I'm not, like I said, I'm not sure what happened that healed me completely, but that I can actually talk. Like, I'm even drinking coffee as I'm talking, Seth, so that I can talk without my voice breaking, without me crying, without me even sighing or anything. I think it means I've totally moved on. The closure, I'm not sure I've found, because I still wish I could lay a wreath on his final resting place. That is one thing I have prayed for every day. And I hope one day, Sha, God will answer that prayer. Maybe the day Labake tells them that she wants to see where her father is buried, I would follow them. So basically, that is it. And I will tell anybody who is walking this kind of journey. In Africa, we are very spiritual. There are a lot of things you can't explain with logic. And if you are preparing to fight physically, just know you are fighting spiritually as well. And if you are not careful, I don't know, you will see things and well. So that's just it, basically. Spiritually, physically, I fought. I know I did. But we thank God. So the spiritual cannot be. I know we're in a generation of wokeness. Yes, I know, but there are some things wokeness won't even cut. Things will happen and you'll just be like, ah, what is this? So, yeah, this makes me remember one thing one of my area aunties told me that year. I had gotten well then, so I just went to her place. She's a prophetess. So she just looked at me and she was just like, ah, bring your hands. And I gave her I think it was my left hand. And she just looked and she was like, ah, now all she's seeing is darkness. Now the darkness is not even for me. I said, then who is it for? She said she doesn't know, but that's not clear. But all she sees is darkness, that I shouldn't dwell on the fact that I'm separated from Labake's dad. That was when it was still free. It was still alive then. And I was just like, I shouldn't draw as in, what are you saying now? She said, all she sees is darkness. I should move on. It was later when he died that I knew that the darkness he saw meant death. Even me, the week he died, there were some things I saw, but I was still young then. Maybe if I was this wise now, I would have known. But I just dismissed it and it was dead 9 days later. So basically, that is it. You say,
It is well, yeah. And
it sounds scary, Abby.
yeah, it sounds scary, but that's life in itself. Life is a struggle and life is a challenge.
Yes,
And
it is. I know.
you'd be shocked when people tell you things they've been through or things they are going through presently.
Yes.
You're right about struggling to find closure
Yeah.
because you've still not been able to pay your respects to somebody you totally and completely loved and even had a child with. And your child
Yes.
also has not been able to pay that respect, like close that circle of knowing that, okay, I was told that my dad had passed away when I was very young, but it's still a mystery. It's still like it's not real, or it's still like I almost never had a father, even as much as I would see pictures of him, and my mother would tell me stories of him and even his family. But I think finding closure simply means closing that circle of being
Yes.
able to just pay the dead their respects and have that freedom to go there once in a while whenever you feel that's what's right for you to do at that particular point, or you feel like you just want to pay rare respects, maybe on the anniversary of the death or whatever the case is. People do that a lot, right?
It's
a form of healing. It's a form of therapy for people. So, and that's why I'm like, if his family, if they want to make things right, they should start from there. I think that's the most important thing to do. If you truly, yes, truly want to make things right, if you want to bridge the gap and everything, allow these people the opportunity to just find closure by closing that vicious circle, and they can continue to heal and from that whole process. That's what I would say. But another question I really want to ask you is, you said something earlier about if you had known better and you were young at that particular age. So there might be someone or people listening to this right now, and it's like they may be going through a similar situation, and they might also be young, or even if they are not young, but due to the fact that you've gone through this situation and you have a few things you can actually say to them. But most importantly, what did you think you would have done differently back then?
Okay. Probably back then. Like I said, the week he died, I saw, you know, we were separated. So my case is a bit peculiar.
Yeah.
Now, the week he died, when he was alive, he had pink lips. And whenever he wanted to fall sick, his lips would darken. That was how I would always know. Hmm. And his sickness is malaria, AA problems. So when I see his lips darken, I'm like, I see your lips are getting dark, malaria. Oh yeah, let's treat. So that week, my lips started getting dark. I didn't even notice quickly. It was my mom that was like, ah, what is this? I said, what happened? She said, your lips. I said, my lips. And I looked at the mirror. Ah. So jokingly, I now said, when I am not, I ideally that it is when he wants to be sick that his lips will start turning black. You know, jokingly, I just said, probably if I was much older then, I would have like, is I ideally in trouble? If I see any sign like that now, I would know, definitely. So I just said it and we just laughed over it. There was an ASUU strike at that period. So all of us were home. And my house is always free for all, even till now. So people were always coming and going, all those area booths and all of that. So all of us were inside the house that afternoon, about 2 or 3 days later. One of them was like, sister, see your lips. What is happening? You know, my lips were gradually turning dark. I said, I don't even know, Jarida. What is this gone? Then my mind kept going to him, but I was just like, oh, he's okay, Jerry. There's nothing wrong. Then he was calling me incessantly about 2 days before the incident happened. I think I was in a party, so I didn't pick. And then, what is this one disturbing me for? So I just said, well, I'll call him later. I forgot to call him. And that was that. Maybe if I had called him, probably. I don't. There are so many ifs that I don't want to think about it anymore. Then by the ninth day when he would now die, my lips were completely black. And I was always falling into trances, visions, and I would just see complete darkness. And I'll be like, who is dead or who wants to die? I kept asking myself that question. That somebody is dead or somebody wants to die, but I don't know who. My sense did not even still tell me that, okay, well, are you sure it is not your daily? But I did not even. So it was something after he now died, and months after, I was now remembering, and I was like, had I known? You know, for 9 days, he was alive. And I wouldn't have left him to die, because his family actually left him to die, as far as me, I'm concerned. Because I would later hear that the bullet wound started having gangrene. I don't understand what kind of hospital was he taking to that the wound was having gangrene, and you people stood there and watched him die. If I had known, if I had been called, or if I had called, or maybe something had happened and I had known, I would have moved him down to Abeokuta. Now there are good hospitals here. In spite of everything, he's still the father of my child. Then probably maybe when I was asked to choose, then I would have still chosen my education, yes, but maybe I would have gone about it in a more diplomatic way. But I would always choose myself. So if there's anybody who is freshly widowed now, and the situation is like my own, just know that you don't have any family of husband, though. Face your children squarely, because they will behave as if you and your children don't even exist. That's if they don't even collect. There was a time they tried to collect my daughter from me, and I didn't even remember to say that. You know, that one was giving me issues, and my mom now called. It's my mom that calls them, or used to call them then. So my mom now called my father-in-law, and they now came down. Child, that you are not paying their school fees. Oh. They now came down, and you know, they came to take her to Lagos. Okay, fine. My daughter spent maybe, I can't remember how many weeks, but less than a month. And she had to actually take her grandmother's phone one midnight around 2 a.m. to text me to come and pick her. That I shouldn't reply the message, oh, that I should please come and pick her. I had to go to Lagos that morning to go and pick her. If I picked her, luckily for me, my father-in-law wasn't home, my mother-in-law wasn't home, and I practically took my daughter and fled. Like we fled, as in not even say we run, we fled. Yes. And the things the girl told me when she went when we got back home, I was just like, you are never going back there. Whatever problem you are giving me, we would overcome this. Yes. And the things she picked up from there, it was horrible. But let's just thank God. My daughter is doing fine by the grace of God today. We have the bestest relationship. But when people say they envy our relationship, I tell them that it took a long time for me to get there with her. There's no manual for parenting, especially when you're doing it alone. A father figure is needed. There are sometimes when that lapse is always there, that there's no manly hand like that, like that. But we turned out well eventually because I had friends who actually stood by me. And they were like, I know, you pull through this. So today, me and my daughter, we relate like sisters. And I'm even the one who begs her to try and make sure that she keeps it open with her father's family. Because I don't want anybody to say it is me that is taking their child away from them. If your child doesn't want to associate with you, that's her problem. But it won't be from me. She has eyes, she has ears. She can see and she can hear. And she's no longer a kid. She was 19 on the 1st of October. So what are we saying? And she's not stupid. Even if you lied when she was younger, and she's old now, she has seen through your lies. So I will just tell anybody walking this path that after God, it is God. And the support system is a strong support system. If you do not have that, no, forget it. It is not a journey you can walk alone. So let people in. Just let people in. I think your platform is so great that you need to create more awareness with it because you guys are doing a fantastic job.
Thank you very much,
Yes.
ma'am.
You are doing, this is not because I'm talking to you. This is what I would say if I'm not talking to you. But please publicize it more. I didn't know about you guys until you reached out to me via DM. I didn't know. I didn't even know such a platform existed. And I'm sure there are many more of such platforms. A lot of people need help, I swear. But how can you be helped if you do not tell people you need help?
Yeah, that's true.
So, and a lot of people are scared. Maybe the stigma, maybe, I don't know. Some people, we are, maybe my own threshold for pain is high. I don't stay down for longer. Staying down has never been an option for me. 1 minute I'm down, that's when I'm like, ah, see, there are things to be done, I beg. Solution, straight. But a lot of people are not like that. Some people are so broken that they believe they can't even get up again. And yes, and no, that is not the case. I don't even think, what's the worst that can happen to a human being? It is death. If you are not dead, there's always that ray of hope. There's always that thing you can do as long as you are still alive. So if you are alive, let people in, let them help you. If you stretch your hand, people will lift you up.
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
So yes, people will lift you up. But if you don't stretch your hand, how would they know you need lifting up? They wouldn't know now. I'm talking because I have that same problem. I find it difficult to ask people for help. Because I have this notion that a lot of people do not even care. They're just looking for content.
Yeah.
They just want something to gossip with. So I'm very, very worried of letting people in. I don't make friends easily. As playful as the person I am, I don't make friends easily. Because I'm just like, ah, this one now will come with baggage now. See, you people should just leave me alone. Now, probably because I grew up as an only child. So I'm used to being alone. When I was growing up, all that surrounded me were books. Books and dogs. I had this insane love for canines. Until today, I'm like that. I have always had at least one dog. So I would rather play with dogs than be in the company of human beings. I have always been like that. Or I would read a book. I grew up reading books. By the time I was like maybe 8 years old, I had read every Enid Blyton book ever published in this world. And I had moved on to Sidney Sheldon's by the time I was in primary four. So I would just lose myself inside one world like that and be one heroine or one villain. And you people would be menacing in your human world. I won't even see any of you. So that was how I grew up. So being alone has always been a thing for me. So it's difficult letting people in. I would rather talk to a dog than talk to a human being. That was my mentality. But as time went on, I found out that it wasn't the best. It's not the best way to live. No man is an island. Fine, it's okay to be alone than to be surrounded by idiots. But not everybody is an idiot. Look for the real ones and let them in.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yes.
I just quickly want to piggyback on some of the things you said.
Okay.
The fact that you had the if question, I think that is one of the questions that plagues us a lot about life. Like, if I had done this, if I had done that. Especially when you lose someone. I can speak from experience about that kind of issue. But I think the if question is good, but one should not dwell solely on it.
Yes.
The if question is important for you to know what to do next time and for you to sometime give advice to people like, hey, here are some of the mistakes I made. But the if question is something that would consume one if you dwell on it so much. I would really advise people to understand what has happened, internalize it, recognize some of the mistakes, but also realize that you're just human and there's a limit to what you can actually do. Another thing I wanted to talk about is I understand when you talk about raising a child alone, that's never easy. My parents got separated when I was very young, so my mother practically
myself as well.
My mother practically raised me and my two elder sisters, and I can see the pain and the struggle that comes when women are raising their children alone. It's not easy at all. It is a physical and a psychological battle and stress, because on one hand you're doing everything well to make sure you set your kids right and you provide for them, and it's almost at the same time it's almost like whatever she does is not enough, because whatever happens, there's always this factor like, that is what happens when a woman raises a child. Society never gives enough credit, because it's like, whatever she does, there's this mentality of, what have you done for me lately? Like, you better not make a mistake, or your children better not act up or make any form of mistake, because when they do, everybody ignores the fact that you've kept the family together for a very long time. Everybody ignores the fact that whatever situation, they say, that is happening because he was raised by a single mother. This is
by
happening
woman,
because,
yes.
Yeah. But when something happens, when a family is together, like two couples are together, like a couple are together and they have child, like everybody says, oh, that's God's will. Like they did something. Or sometimes they still blame the parents or whatever. But I'm just trying to like say like, It is extra for them to not just have to even just provide, but it's even like the pressure that comes with that whole situation, that no matter what happened, their kids must be perfect, is also something that's a psychological torture added to like the whole physical stress and everything. So I can totally understand that, and society should do better when they are addressing such issues or talking about such issues, or recognizing the fact that even being a parent, being like having both parents raise children, is not easy. Talk less of just one person. And the parts where you talked about letting people in, I think one of the greatest misconceptions we've had is like, if you seek for help, you're weak, or you are not strong enough or something. But the reality is, those who can let people in a time of need are truly the bravest amongst us.
Yes.
Because it takes bravery, it takes strength to actually recognize the fact that I may not be able to do this alone and I need help. That is the bravest thing a man can do. Whatever society has said and twisted that whole thing to say you're weak if you seek for help or whatever is totally and completely wrong. Completely. There's something my sister said to me one time when my mom passed away, and I was very emotional, and I was asking and I was saying a lot of things about what's wrong with life and whatever. There's nothing to even live for, be cheerful for, and everything. So my sister was like, see, when the devil wants to come in and deal with you, he would make you not recognize every good thing that's available in your life.
True.
And make life seem very hopeless for you. Like, and that is when you know the devil is at work. That's when you know you're going into a dark place. When you can no longer recognize what is good about your life and what is good around you and the positive things. When you can only see the negative, then something is totally, totally wrong.
Wrong.
So I also want people to know that fact, that whenever it seems like you don't see the good in yourself, the good in others, and the good around your own life or society or whatever the case is, and you are only seeing the negative continuously, realize that something may be wrong and you just need to take a break and slow down a little bit so you don't become resentful. Yeah. Because resentment,
and bitter.
Yes, resentful and bitter, exactly. Because resentment is the devil. I say that a lot.
I know.
And you don't go the extremes or do things that you're not supposed to do. Like there's a saying like, speak when you're angry and you make the best speech you would ever regret.
The best speech you would ever regret.
Or like you take actions that you would forever regret. It goes both ways. So. Yeah, I just really needed to get that off my chest. Thank you very much again. And
thank you too. Yeah. I appreciate this.
Yeah, you're really welcome. Mm.
Yeah.
I truly, truly want to thank you a lot for coming on here. I'm glad you are able to open up and share your story. And I'm glad that you feel some kind of you feel a little bit lighter, like you said, just by
I do.
And my hope is a lot of people will listen to this and get some kind of help and
understand that they
are not alone, and other people have actually gone through the situation and are going through the situation. And if you can actually come out this well and have dealt and handled the situation this well, that means they can also do it. And they just have to take some of the advice you've laid down here today, and
that would
help them moving forward. So I'm truly, truly glad. I thank you so, so much for taking the time to have this conversation with me. And And yeah, so rounding up, is there anything else you'd like to leave us with? Is there anything else you'd like to say at all?
What's there to say? Other than that, mental health is not something to be toyed with. It's a serious issue, and I hope more people will pay attention by letting people in. Letting people in is very, very important. Because those times I said I was suicidal, I wasn't letting anybody in, not even my mother. I was pretending to be strong. And that is what kills a lot of people, pretending to be strong when you know you are not strong. If you have to break down, break down. People around you will pick the pieces. They will help you. But believing that, I got this. A lot of us don't get it. We have not gotten anything. As in, we need help. So I just hope more people would let people in and, you know, allow people guide them and hold their hands. Sometimes it is not about money. It is about kindness. And a little bit of kindness goes a very, 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 very long way. So basically, allow people in. Let them help. Yeah. That's all I say.
That's a wonderful way to wrap up this conversation. Thank you very, very much. I can't say that enough. And I'll definitely be in touch.
Of course. When they eventually take her to her father's grave, I will let you know. I will make sure I follow them and do video. Okay. Yes.
We truly hope for that.
No, I will keep you posted. Definitely. That's a promise.
Yeah, thank you very, very much, man.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening to this conversation. To support this podcast, please like, share, leave a comment or a review, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter @Piers_Arena. Thank you once more.